before and during World War II, the government of Japan forced hundreds of thousands of women into sexual slavery to serve Japanese troops in places that the Japanese had occupied. It happened in China, Korea, in the Philippines, elsewhere in Southeast Asia. The war crimes tribunals that took place after World War II did not deal with this at all. And it was something that, until fairly recently, really was not discussed, until some of the women who were survivors started to speak out about their experiences and bring this chapter of World War II history to the world. As a result, a number of Japanese women who were interested in this particular issue and related issues relating to sexual exploitation of women began to feel that this was something that certainly should be addressed by the government, that there should be some acknowledgement that it happened and that reparations should be paid to these women and perhaps also their descendants. And in fact, a tribunal was organized and held in Japan just at the end of last year. The Japanese government was not involved. It did, however, get international coverage. And one of the results was a condemnation of the World War II government of Japan and of the last emperor, Hirohito, saying that they were indeed responsible for this and continued to those that were involved continue to say this is something that the government needs to directly address. And we'll be talking this morning with a Japanese journalist, feminist activist who was one of the organizers of this tribunal. Her name is Yayori Matsui. She's director of Asia-Japan Women's Resource Center, also chaired the Violence Against Women in War Network. And she's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois. And we're pleased that she could come and spend some time with us. She is a graduate of Tokyo University. She studied foreign studies there. She then, in 1961, went to work as a journalist for the Asahi Shimbun, the second biggest Japanese newspaper, and worked there until 1994 when she retired. She continues to work as a freelance journalist. She's also done a lot of lecturing, various universities, and also been involved in various non-governmental organizations like the ones that we have mentioned. As we talk, you certainly, folks who are listening, should feel free to welcome to call and talk with us if you have questions. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, if people have questions, you're welcome to call. One thing we just ask is that people try to be brief just so we can keep things moving along. Well, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate you including us on your time here in Champaign-Urbana.
I'm so glad to be here. This is my first visit to Illinois. Thank you very much for calling me.
Let's talk here basically about the experiences of these women that were euphemistically called comfort women.
Yes.
And that we're talking here and not about women that were taken against their will, held captive, repeatedly raped in an organized manner.
Yes.
Was this indeed something that was a matter of a formal policy by the Japanese government?
Yes, it was. Actually, the Japanese government denied in the beginning. They used to say, oh, it was done by the private agents and it was just a prostitution. But because the survivors for the first time came forward only after the 1990s, because you see the victims of the sexual violence used to forced to keep silence because they are so afraid of being sort of stigmatized and discriminated. But we were so impressed because some Korean comfort women came forward in 1991. They really changed the whole history, I think, in a sense, to highlight why sexual violence, particularly wartime sexual violence, was not punished, I mean prosecuted. So the issue of the impunity of wartime sexual violence became a sort of big issue in the global women's movement now.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, after these survivors came forward, the Japanese government could not deny the involvement of the state. And so in 1993, officially, the Japanese government admitted the involvement of the state and the military, but the Japanese government continues to deny the legal responsibility because they claim that all these issues of reparation have been settled down, solved by the peace treaty or the bilateral agreements on reparation between Japan and the Philippines, Japan and the South Korea, and so on. So the survivors have been really trying so hard to get compensation, and already 8 lawsuits have been filed by survivors of various countries. But unfortunately, the Japanese court always denied the claims filed by the survivors. This is the situation.
Mm-hmm. And this does, as we talked a little bit before we started here, this does have some urgency because just within the last few years, a number of women have unfortunately passed away.
And yes, that's true.
Your take on this is you think that the Japanese government is just hoping that if they stall on this long enough, that these women will be dead, and that they think that means they won't have to deal with them anymore.
Yes, actually, I want to tell you about some figures. How many already have passed away? For instance, the members of the VAWNET, Violence Against Women in War Network Japan, visited Pyongyang in North Korea last year, and in North Korea, 218 combat women were registered, and out of them, 43 agreed to testify publicly. But out of 43, already 21 died. And in case of South Korea, nearly 200 have come forward, but about 50 have passed away. And those women who are in advanced age really feel that why they have to, survivors have to suffer so much, but the perpetrators have just enjoyed their life without being punished at all. So that's why we, Japanese women, because we are the sort of women of the perpetrating country, have to respond to this kind of cry, appeal from the dying survivors. That's why we decided to hold this Women's International War Crimes Tribunal. Because in order to address the issue of the war crimes, and there must be 3 measures. One is investigation or truth finding, because the Japanese government already tried to hide and cover up what's happened. The secondly, the reparation or compensation or other redress to the survivors. And the third is the prosecution of perpetrators. Mm-hmm. So we have been trying very hard in the first 2 subjects, that means the investigation and reparation issue in Japan also, because there are so many women's groups have been formed to support these survivors. But the third issue of punishment, war criminals, has been totally taboo in Japanese society. But I want to tell you some historical facts that it was partly responsibility of the United States government, because after war, at the military trial, the United States government did not agree to prosecute the emperor, who was the supreme commander, and also the United States military knew about the comfort of women system, because you know there are many survivors, such as Korean survivors or other countries, were captured by the U.S. Army. They interrogated so many documents of interrogation, but those days, even the United States or other allied military did not understand this system as a sort of crime. They thought, it's just sort of prostitution, that's all. Mm. So that's why they didn't prosecute the perpetrators at all.
Hmm. So, well, I think just recently, as a result of the kind of war crimes investigations that have gone on in connection with what's happened in the Balkans, we finally acknowledged the fact that sexual assault, or sort of organized sexual assault, was a crime against humanity, and should be dealt with that way. And
yes,
in fact, I think some of the people that were involved in the tribunal in Tokyo were also associated with the war crimes.
Yes, that's right. Actually, it was in 1993 at the United Nations World Conference on Human Rights, where the survivors of the Japan's military sexual slavery from Asia and the survivors of the mass rape in Bosnia met together, and both of them appealed to the world this issue should be redressed as a crime against women. And then for the first time at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia and Rwanda, these wartime sexual violence, such as sexual slavery or mass rape, were prosecuted for the first time. This is as a result of the very sort of worldwide campaign by women's groups. So I think now many people realize this kind of wartime sexual violence should be punished and should be stopped. So I think some kind of progress now being achieved, I think.
I should introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580. We're speaking with Japanese journalist Yoyori Matsui. She's director of the Asia-Japan Women's Resource Center and also chaired the Violence Against Women and War Network in Japan. And as we have mentioned, she was one of the people that was involved in organizing this tribunal, the Women's International War Crimes Tribunal on Japan's Military Sexual Slavery. This took place at the end of just last year in December in Tokyo. And it is intended to shed light on the experiences of those women. And we are talking about hundreds of thousands of women from around Asia that were forced into sexual slavery by the Japanese government before and during World War II to serve Japanese troops, the women euphemistically referred to as comfort women.
So let me explain a little bit about this Women's International War Crimes Tribunal.
Yes.
It was really a sort of historical because we could invite 64 survivors of this military sexual slavery from 8 countries, including East Timor, because it was for the first time women who are victimized this system from East Timor came forward. They came all the way to Tokyo, and about 20, more than 20 women testified, of course, in tears, very painful. Many of them were taken at the age of 13, 14 years old. They were raped by 10, 20 military men every day. Can you imagine how painful for them? But even after more than 50 years, they never forget this traumatic experience. And also, we could invite about 500 participants from all over the world, including those who are working on the current armed conflict issues. And also, so that about the audience was 1,100, so we had a 3 days trial, and we had a very, very sort of respected international law experts, and presiding judge was an African-American woman whose name is Gabrielle Kirk MacDonald, who was a former president of the International Criminal Court for the former Yugoslavia. And also we had a Miss Patricia Sellers as chief prosecutor, who is also the still working as a legal advisor for this former Yugoslavia. So they gave us a very, very important judgment the last day, and that is Japanese government is responsible, sort of a state responsibility, because they violate all kind of international laws. And also, it was so important to prosecute the individual perpetrators for the first time. And the emperor was also found guilty for the first time in the post-war history. So when this judgment was read by 4 judges, one after another, the whole audience really made a very big applause, and the survivors went up to the stage in tears. They greeted the judges. It was a really dramatic moment, and more than 300 journalists all over the world came to report this tribunal, and it was widely covered in many media in the other countries also.
Mm. What kind of coverage did this get in Japan?
That's the problem, as you know. I was so terrified because the largest newspaper in Japan with more than 10 million circulation, another newspaper has never written at all, for instance. But English edition published some very long article. And actually, before I came here, I had to start some kind of protest against the biggest broadcasting company because they made a 45-minute program for this Women's Tribunal, but the right-wing attacked and 30 right-wing people just rushed into this building of the broadcasting NHK to stop this program. So the program was prepared so well, but suddenly the Women's Tribunal was reported only 10 minutes and nothing about the organizer, nothing about the judgment at all. It was very, very painful. I mean, the disappointing situation. Why the people in Japan was taking the opportunity to know about this tribunal. And that reminds me the situation of media during World War II. For instance, Rape of Nanking was widely reported by the foreign media, but nothing in Japan. So I think it is really serious. Mm-hmm. Actually, now the right wing is really rising in Japan, and they insult comfort women, so-called, as prostitutes who wanted to make money, all kind of insulting comments. And finally, they succeeded in removing the description of comfort women's issue from the junior high school history textbook. So that is the situation. That's why we have to continue to fight for justice for the survivors.
Is this something that people in an informal way talk about? It may be that within the Japanese language media, the papers and the television, it's not. But is this something that there is, when people just get together and talk, it's something that's discussed? Or even on that level, is it something that people just feel so uncomfortable about and perhaps so embarrassed about that they... It's one of those subjects that people just don't want.
Yeah, that's true. Because, you know, this is a shame for Japan, you know, to abuse such a young girl sexually. Mm-hmm. So the right wing started targeting this issue, you know. And then, so there are so many difficult situations about this issue because there are many strong groups of right wing people who take up this issue to prevent us to fight. And we are called Masochistic Historical View Group. And they call themselves Liberal Historical View Group. They formed a special group to rewrite the textbook. And they succeeded in editing one special history textbook. It is totally distorted content, you see. It's a really, so I think this is a sort of global phenomenon. So nationalism, fundamentalism, which glorify the sort of memory of the past, you see, and erase and deny the past crimes of your own country. This kind of nationalism is growing in other countries, also just neo-Nazi. So really we have to be very careful against this kind of trend.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller to talk with, and others certainly would be welcome. If you're listening in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455, toll-free, anywhere the signal will travel, around Illinois, Indiana, any place else, 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here in Aurora, and this would be a line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hi, good morning. First, to thank you for doing this work, because if you do it in one country... For women, you do it for all women, and we need to have that. Do you have organizations or maybe I should say, how many women's organizations do you have in Japan fighting for that?
I think more than 50 women, because as I mentioned before, already 5 lawsuits filed by the survivors to demand compensation from the Japanese government. So many groups have been formed to support each group. For instance, the Filipino group or the Korean group, and some groups are doing mainly showing the video of the comfort women's issue, and all kinds, some lawyers groups or some women's groups who have been working on the sex trafficking issue, now also working on this issue. But I think mainstream women's movement in Japan are not so active on this issue, you see, because, you know, they don't want to talk about too much politics. And
well, it's hard to talk about sex also.
Yeah, that's right.
Talk about a sexual thing, that act that was done to you. It's very difficult. How does the United Nations fit in this?
Actually, already after some survivors came forward, particularly Korean women's groups who went to the United Nations, particularly the United Nations Human Rights Commission, and already three very important reports have been submitted. One by Ms. Radhika Kumaraswamy, who is a special rapporteur on violence against women. She submitted a special report on this Japan's military sexual slavery as early as 1996, including the recommendation that the Japanese government should pay reparation to survivors. And another very important report was written by Ms. Gay McDougall, who was a former special rapporteur on military sexual slavery, and also submitted to the Subcommission of Human Rights. And this report was very important because she recommended not only the reparation, but also she emphasized the importance of prosecution, the punishment of those perpetrators. So these kind of reports have been accepted by the United Nations, but the problem is that the government refused to implement this recommendation. So that's why we are making campaigns to pressurize, to put more pressure on the Japanese government. But we are still not so powerful enough.
Are there any women's groups that might be of Japanese descent that are working here in America, that are working with you?
Yes, actually, when we organized this Women's International War Crimes Tribunal, there were American women who are working on the women's human rights issue, particularly the violence against women in armed conflict, which are taking place now. And also, there are very strong women's groups in the United States to pressurize campaign on the International Criminal Court, as you have heard, because this is a permanent sort of war crime tribunal which is going to be established because the statute was adopted in Rome Conference in 1998. But unfortunately, the United States government is against this ICC. So that's why there are American women who are really campaigning to ratification of this ICC statute. So we are working together with these American women.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Others are welcome. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. The tribunal that we have talked about, the Women's International War Crimes Tribunal on Japan's military sexual slavery, long name, took place in December, did issue a judgment against the wartime Japanese government, the last emperor.
Yes.
And in some of the stories I have read, it says that then there'll be a further sort of statement coming out next month.
Yeah.
What will that be?
This Women's Tribunal was held by the International Organizing Committee, which is consisted of bound to Japan of puppeteering country and organization of six victim countries. That means North Korea, South Korea, China, Taiwan, Indonesia, the Philippines. And the third party is the International Advisory Committee, whose members are mainly women working on the current armed conflict issues. And then after this organizing committee was formed, we decided to draft a charter for the tribunal, and we decided to prosecute both individuals and also the state. And also after that, each country, particularly victim countries, decided to form the prosecutor's team, and each country has already written country indictment. So each country identified some military leaders who are responsible for the comfort station in each area. And chief prosecutors wrote a common indictment. So the total number of those defendants, I mean those who are accused, amount to more than 20, about 25. Only the emperor was found guilty during the tribunal, but other defendants should get a judgment by the final judgment. So that will be the main contents, including the Tojo, the military leader, and other high-rank military officials and government officials. Many of them were already prosecuted, punished, or executed by the Faisan Tokyo trial. But they were not charged for this military sexual slavery issue. So this women's tribunal was defined as a sort of appendix or addendum to the Tokyo trial. So the final judgment will include the judgment for about 24 defendants.
And are many of these men still living?
No, many of them, all of them are dead. And many people criticize why you indicted these dead persons. But the purpose of this tribunal, this is not the real tribunal because the criminal code is held by the based on state sovereignty. But this tribunal is a people's tribunal based on the people's sovereignty. So we can make our own way of doing. So the main purpose of this tribunal has two purposes. One is to make it clear this military sexual slavery was a crime, because as you know, the right wing is saying, oh, it's not a crime, it's just a prostitution or something. So, but those survivors really ask this should be established as a crime. So the second is to end the impunity of wartime sexual slavery. So I think this tribunal had a meaning to change the sort of way of thinking people how to use the international law, because international law should be applied for this kind of wartime sexual slavery or sexual violence also.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you explained, it seemed that the intent clearly was to gather information,
yes,
to build a case.
Yes, that's right.
Build a case for reparations, build, yes, a case that says, look, the government did this, and here were these people in the government that,
right,
were directly responsible. We know who they are. We can name them. We know what they did. And that even though the tribunal itself wouldn't have the power to
enforcement,
the fact that it was happening and that you were raising the issue, that was perhaps the most important thing that you were trying to do.
Keeping records in history is another important function of this tribunal. Because what happened should be not forgotten or erased.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in hearing you talk, and you already have talked a little bit about this, and perhaps more generally,
yes,
about how in recent years people in Japan think about World War II and what their nation did. There has been, I think, in Western media, some discussion about what the Japanese are or are not doing and trying to come to grips with their wartime past, at least acknowledging and whether or not there is a tendency to fall back on the idea that Japan was a victim. It would not so much had victimized others, but was Japan was a victim. And I wonder whether you think that much progress has been made in really a kind of honest appraisal of what Japan did during World War II.
But we have to look at rather both aspects, because as far as the government level is concerned, I feel very sorry to say that the Japanese government has not really changed the policy, denying the responsibility, because the Japanese politics is now controlled by the very conservative right-wing who does not want to admit the responsibility. But as far as the people's level, all kind of activities and campaigns and researches, investigations and publications to admit or to accuse these war crimes in the past. So I don't know how to evaluate the progress in this issue. I'm very sorry that the government is still very, very... So I think this is really the problem for Japan, because the Asian people who are victimized never trust Japan without, really coming term with this past. So I think... the new century, I think Japan should really think of true reconciliation with other Asian people through acknowledging the past. That's what we, many people in Japan, are trying to do.
I have read some stories that recently a small number of Japanese men who were soldiers in World War II have started to actually talk about their experiences. And and it's a very apparently surprising thing, and also difficult for both them and for other people, that they, what they did, they kept it inside them for all of these now 50 years and more, and only just recently.
That's true. Actually, at this Women's Tribunal, there are two Japanese former military men came to testify. So how they raped, gang raped Chinese women, how they served this military sexual system. So their testimonies impressed the audience, because, you know, it was very, very, they need courage to confess what did. But actually, many people are asking who these two military men, and they belong to the one group, which is a military, Japanese former military men returning from China, because all of these former soldiers were arrested, detained as war criminals in China. And the Chinese way of, treating these war criminals are a little bit different, because the Chinese gave them very good food, treated them very well, and wait for them to confess themselves what they did. And finally, they confessed. Then they came back and they decided to tell the truth to the people. So they have formed. So they have their own organization. They publish letters. So they make a speaking tours. But even these members said it is for them, now it is easy for them to talk about how brutally they killed the Chinese people, how they were so brutal. But for them, it is still so difficult for them to confess about the sexual violence and rape. So among even the members, only small number of men talk about this rape case. So we appreciate their courage to talk about, you know. They said, I cannot tell this kind of thing to my wife and daughters, but still they decided to talk.
We're coming to about our last 15 minutes on the program, and I should again introduce our guest. Yayoi Matsui is a Japanese journalist and feminist activist. She worked for a number of years for the Asahi Shimbun, a big newspaper, second biggest newspaper in Japan, in a number of capacities. She's retired since, but continues to work as a freelance journalist. Has also lectured at a number of universities around Japan, and is involved in various non-governmental organizations. And as I mentioned, she was one of the people that was involved in organizing the Women's International War Crimes Tribunal on Japan's military sexual slavery, which took place in December in Tokyo. And questions certainly are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Maybe, too, I should mention a book that our guest has written dealing with perhaps slightly more contemporary women's issues in Asia, including the impact on globalization and also sexual violence, because it continues to be an issue. And perhaps we can talk a little bit about that, too. This book is titled Women in the New Asia by Yayori Matsui, and it is published by, well, there are several publishers, I guess. Which would the one, if you were going to look for this book, would you look for
Zed Books.
Zed. All right. Zed Books, London and New York, and it's in paper.
So let me talk a little bit about our organization,
yeah.
Violent Japan, Violence Against Women War Network Japan, because this Violent has three areas of activities. One is comfort women's issue. The second is a current armed conflict issue. But the third area is a U.S. military base issue. Actually, as you know, there are so many U.S. military base in Okinawa. About 20% of the land is occupied. And there are so many sexual violence, I mean rape by the U.S. military men. So women in Okinawa organized all kind of campaigns against this kind of sexual violence. And also, in relation with this comfort women's issue, I was very much impressed by one professor, American professor, who came to the tribunal, and he wrote a sort of article addressing to the American audience. And this is something about the war crimes by the United States against Vietnam people or Koreans or so. I think I really hope the American people also think about your own countries, because it is Japanese women who think about and who take action against our own country's war crimes. So I think this kind of sort of solidarity campaign is very important to look at your own country. So that is a message which I really want to convey to you.
We have another caller to talk with. This is someone in Urbana, locally here, line number one. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Could your guest give us a list of the places that she will be talking during her visit here to the U of I, and times and locations, and whether they're all open to the public?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that, let me see.
This afternoon, I have 4 o'clock, I'll give a talk at the conference, the lecture meeting. I think you can ask Professor David Goodman, telephone number 217-244-4009. But the meeting will be held in some place in the campus.
We'll,
at 4.
We'll see if we can, before the program is over, we'll see if we can come up with that information.
Right.
I do know that our guest will also be talking at a brown bag seminar, and I assume that anybody who was interested could attend, talking about the Japanese feminist movement and Asian women in the age of globalization. And that will be at 12:30 today in the Foreign Language Building in room 2090B, which is co-sponsored by Women in Gender and Global Perspectives Program and Center for East Asian and Pacific Studies. So that the other one, yes, right, and is indeed here. She's giving a lecture on the War Crimes Tribunal, this subject that we're talking about here. This will be at 4 o'clock this afternoon on the third floor of the Levis Center on the U of I campus. And I would assume that anyone who was interested in coming to hear her should feel welcome
and
that it would
be
open.
And what time at the Levison?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. Thank you so much.
All right, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Other questions? Welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's another Urbana person, line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
In 1960, I was in West Timor in Indonesia, and I met a prince there. They then had princes and little principalities. And he had gained great affection from his people because during the war, he had taken a public beating from Japanese soldiers because he resisted having the young women from his principality to go into these labor camp barracks that they kept there, and it was very clear that the military was directly implicated in that. I wondered if you have any information about people around who at the time resisted and maybe even suffered because of their opposition to this.
About West Timor?
Yes. I'm just thinking about in general in Southeast Asia.
I see. There are several researchers and academics who have made research. One is Professor Yuki Tanaka, who used to teach at Australia. He has published a book of war crimes, which include the situation in this East and West Timor also. And also, but there are some books only in Japanese. So I think I can provide you more concrete information later. So if you give us your contact number.
I can contact you through Goodman.
Okay.
Yes,
I'm
sure he would be able to point you in the right direction, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, again, are welcome. 333-WILD, toll free, 800-222-WILD. I think that perhaps the way that you or other Japanese women have become involved with the matter of the comfort women is that you had been interested, for example, in the issue of sex tourism.
Yes, that's
that
right.
Is Japanese men going from Japan to Thailand or perhaps other places on sex tours. But also you've been very concerned and done some work on the issue of women, Asian women from other places who were brought to Japan also to be involved against their will in organized.
Yes, correct. Actually, how I knew about this comfort women's issue, because in early 1970s, some Korean women protested the Japanese male sex tourists to Korea, and they went to the Gimpo Airport and protesting, don't make our country the brothel for Japanese men. So we were so shocked. So we Japanese women, actually, I myself formed a small group against the Japanese sex tours. Then the Korean women sent a letter to us that this kind of sex tour now by Japanese men is a repetition of the military sexual slavery during World War II. So we were shocked and we started investigating. But those days, there was no survivor who came forward, so we could not really organize the campaign. And it's true, in the 1970s, we were working very hard against these sex tours, but in the 1980s, women from neighboring Asian countries came to Japan to work in the sex industry. Particularly, we have so many Thai women who are sent to Japan by trafficking organizations, and many of them are from Hill tribe girls, and they were just contemporary sex slaves. So sometimes they want to escape from this kind of condition, and they kill their brother owners, so they are arrested. So that's why we, Japanese women, formed the support groups, and we visit them at the detention center, go to the court process, and we have been doing all kind of campaigns to support them. But the problem is that how to really stop this kind of trafficking, but because of the globalized economy, it is very difficult because sex trafficking is expanding widely in the whole Asia-Pacific region. Just I came back from Cambodia, there, so many young girls from the rural area are sent to the capital, Phnom Penh, and I saw the vast border areas where very, very young girls who are standing around waiting for clients. That is the situation. So I think this globalized sex trafficking is really the serious women's human rights issue now we have to tackle.
How is that something that the Japanese government, as far as Japan is concerned, is acknowledging? I would assume that would be kidnapping someone and bringing them and forcing them to work in the sex industry against their will would be a crime.
Actually, it's very slow because this is very complicated. The trafficking business involves all kind of underground crime organizations, both in Japan and in Thailand. So there must be some kind of international cooperation between these countries. So we have been pressurizing the government, but very not effective at all to curb this business, frankly speaking.
Well, we are coming to the point where we're going to have to close this hour. We've just used our time. I do want to mention once again, my apologies for not having mentioned this earlier, because I think there may well be some people in and around Champaign-Urbana who would like to hear more of our guest on this subject. So she will be giving a formal lecture this afternoon at 4 o'clock on the third floor of the Levis Center on the U of I campus on her experience and involvement in the Women's International War Crimes Tribunal for Japan's military sex slavery during World War II. That was the tribunal took place in Tokyo in December of last year. So anybody who was in and around Champaign-Urbana who is interested certainly should feel welcome. Also, if you'd like to read the book that I've mentioned that she's written, Women in the New Asia, published by Zed Books, London and New York, our guest, journalist, feminist activist, Yori Matsui. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.